form and the true form of what Islam is. And we also spoke about our responsibilities in regards to that. So that was the first of two main goals that the Imam highlights in his letter to his brother. The second goal is the concept of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. We said that the Holy Imam stated, وَإِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ لِطَالَبِ الْإِسْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّي وَأَنْ أَمُرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَأَنْهَا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. So this is the continuation of the statement. So to enjoin the good and forbid the evil. Now we've touched on this concept in previous discussions, but inshallah for the discussion today to be complete, we'll only go over a few simple points, and then we'll inshallah try to make the connections and links as to what we need to do and our responsibilities in regards to that. So we know that enjoining the good and forbidding the evil are a part of the furu' ad-din. We know that Islamic teachings and the religion of Islam is broken up into two parts. We have the usul, the foundation, the pillars, the fundamentals, which are all beliefs and ideologies. That means it only exists in one's mind and heart. There is no action that needs to be done. And then we have the furu' ad-din, which are the actions and the practical laws that one then applies his beliefs into action. Of these practical laws that we have prayer, we have fasting, we have giving charity, we have jihad, we also have enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. So as far as how important it is, it's on the same level as prayer. It's on the same level as fasting. We all pray, inshallah, we all fast, we all give charity. But we have a problem with some of the other furu' ad-din. One of them is this, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala makes reference to the importance of this furu' ad-din in a number of verses in the Holy Quran, which we shared one before. We'll repeat that, inshallah, we'll share another, and we'll continue with what, how we need to approach and how we need to really put this part of religion into action. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala states, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, we said in the 104th verse of Surah Al-Imran, وَلْتَكُمْ مِنْكُمْ أُمَّةٌ يَدْعُونَ إِلَى الْخَيْرِ وَيَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. And of your people, of your ummah, there should be a group that enjoins the good and forbids the evil. For verily those individuals are those who have become successful. So that's one. The second, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَالْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ. So both the believing men and the believing women. So that's everybody. بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضٍ. Some of them are the guardians and the allies of others. We want to touch on this statement. بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضٍ. They look after each other. يَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَيُؤْتُونَ الزَّكَاةَ وَيُطِيعُونَ اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ. They're individuals who enjoin the good, they forbid the evil, they uphold prayer, they give and pay charity, and they obey the message and the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His Messenger. أُولَٰئِكَ سَيَرْحَمُهُمُ اللَّهُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ. Indeed, Allah is exalted in might, and those are the individuals that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has mercy on, and will have mercy on. So this shows the importance of what needs to be done in regards to enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. Now, why is this so important in Islam? Why is this part of the furu' ad-din? Why does this need to be put on the same level as praying and as paying zakah and fasting? The reason is this. Islam isn't a religion that solely propagates this message and this connection and relationship between man and his Lord. Islam's purpose is not only this relationship, the relationship that man has with God. No, Islam is more than that. We know Islam is a holistic religion. Islam is a religion that encompasses every aspect of our lives. It is well-rounded. It is all-inclusive. So in the teachings of Islam, we learn that we have four responsibilities. The first of that is our responsibility towards Allah, which most religions have this element in them. When we look at the definition of religion, it's so broad that it covers anything from Islam all the way to certain religions that only have They feel some spirituality. It doesn't even make clear who they are making the connection with. This is it's a problem, rather it is it's a difficult concept that the scholars have come to understand. How should one define religion? Which is a different discussion, we won't get into that. But the first relationship is one that man has with his Lord. This is typically across the board. And Islam also has this, given that it is a religion. The next relationship one has is man's relationship and his responsibility towards himself. So not only is he responsible towards his Lord, he's also responsible towards himself. The third is that man is responsible towards the environment and other creations of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That means the trees, everything that Allah has created, we are responsible towards that. We have responsibilities towards that. And there are certain things that we must perform and we will be asked about. And the last, the fourth one, is our responsibility towards other human beings. So the fourth element makes reference to what? It makes reference to a social responsibility that exists in Islam. Islam isn't just about praying and feeling spiritual and feeling like you have a connection with God and then doing whatever you want and acting however you like with other people. Islam is about social responsibility. Islam is about morals towards other people. Yes, once you've conquered those, once you properly conquered these stages, will you be able to conquer the next? When you understand your responsibility towards God, and you strengthen this relationship, can you then strengthen your responsibility towards yourself? And when you've conquered that, then you understand the responsibility that you have towards all the other creations that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created. And then you understand your responsibilities towards other human beings. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So, this fourth concept, the responsibility that we have towards other human beings, this touches on the concept and the notion of brotherhood. Brotherhood, which we have spoken about and made reference to a number of times in previous discussions. Brotherhood. What is brotherhood? And why is it so important that brotherhood must exist? We stated that in the verses of the Holy Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us that out of His blessings, one of the biggest blessings that He has given us is that He has made us brothers with each other. That means, as human beings, when we come to disagree and create division within ourselves and become enemies with each other, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, through His blessings, makes us brothers. So who is a brother? And what qualities do individuals hold that are brothers? One is that a brother, a true brother, looks out for his fellow brother. That which he wants for himself, he also wants for the other person. If you like something, you would also like it for your brother. If you like to be fed, if you like to be clothed, if you like to be sheltered, then you must also like that for your brother. If you like to be respected, if you like to be spoken with respectfully, if you don't like people to look down upon you, then you should also want that for your fellow brother. These are qualities of true brothers. What else? When he is in need, you support him. When he's in need, you help him. You need to be there for him. Now this requires what? This requires, first of all, to know who your brother is. Understand his needs and his problems. And once you've done that, can you actually then even have the opportunity to support and help him? So you support and you help your fellow brother. And another quality, and these are vast, but we'll only want to touch on a few. If you look, we have books written on the verses and the hadith and riwayah and stories of the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophets, and again, the verses of the Holy Quran in regards to just relationships, that means friendships. I personally have a book that is maybe 400, 500 pages long that is titled Friendship in Quran and Hadith. So we have many sayings and many stories that outlines who good friends are and what responsibilities they have. Another responsibility, another quality that a good brother has is that when he sees his brother making a mistake, when he sees him at fault, when he sees him destined for something that will harm him, he acts as an individual that can help guide him and show him what is right and wrong. Let's apply this first to our blood relatives, because we understand this notion, we understand all these things very well with blood relatives, but we tend to forget it when it comes to other people. If you see your blood brother or your blood sister, and they're not doing so well, whether financially, whether emotionally, mentally, spiritually, they're not doing well. As a brother, you feel responsible towards supporting them. If you have money, you give to them. If they need moral and mental support, you give to them. If they're sad, you're sad. If they're happy, you're happy. Is this not the case? Also, when we see our brothers and sisters, blood brothers and blood sisters, making a mistake, headed towards something that you know will result in failure, don't we feel responsible towards saying something? If you see your brother or sister embarking in a financial or a business opportunity or investment that you know will go bad, you know that it will end in failure, and the person will be destroyed, don't you feel obligated towards saying something? If you see they're socializing with people that you know are bad for them, even our children, again, there's a brother, there's a relationship between them. When we see our children doing something wrong, don't we feel obligated towards telling them? If you see they're hanging out with bad people, with bad friends, they're going to an environment that you know is unsafe for them. As parents, the first thing we do is we make sure that we make our message clear to them. This is wrong, don't do it. And if they need help, the parents sympathize. If your child is sad, if your child is going through a rough patch, as a father and a mother, you also feel sad for your child. Because you are one in the same. You feel a relationship and responsibility towards them. For if you didn't feel responsible for your children, you would end up like some parents that either abandon their children at birth, they give birth, they leave their children in the dumpster. They don't feel responsible. They give birth, they leave them at the doorstep of some stranger. They give birth, they give them off to orphanages. Or they raise them and they don't care what they do. They can become the failures of society and they can corrupt society, but since the parent doesn't feel responsible, they don't do anything or say anything. So in our culture, that's not the case. We feel responsible towards our children, but we've made a disconnect towards our responsibilities in regards to other brothers and sisters. The most immediate level is towards Muslims, and at the next level, which is just as important, is brothers and sisters in humanity. We have disconnected and we have disregarded this fact. And we'll talk about what happens when we don't really pay the attention that needs to be paid to this issue. So what happens when we abandon enjoining the good and forbidding the evil? It won't be left alone. Quran tells us, and Islamic teachings tells us, that if you don't enjoin the good and forbid the evil, someone else will, but it'll be in another form. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Al-Munafiquna wal-Munafiqat. The disbelieving men and the disbelieving women, those who are corrupt and hypocrites, which we've been speaking about the past few nights, now they'll do something. بَعَدُهُمْ مِنْ بَعْدٍ يَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمُنْكَرِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمَعْرُوفِ Excuse me. وَيَقْبِذُونَ أَيْدِيَهُمْ نَسُوا اللَّهَ فَنَسِيَهُمْ إِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ هُمُ الْفَاسِقُونَ Allah is saying when you abandon your responsibility towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, we said that one of the qualities of the hypocrites is what? For them to portray the image of reform and good in the world. So you abandon it, they will pick it up and they will flip it to something exactly the opposite. Instead of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, they will enjoin the evil and forbid the good. So what does that do? That destroys this concept of brotherhood. It destroys your responsibilities towards other people. Social responsibilities no longer exist. And they will help propagate this message with a number of different concepts that we all agree and accept. For example, one, freedom. which is the foundation and the backbone of a lot of current nations and current societies. They are founded on the notion of freedom. So, freedom means what? Everyone has the right to do whatever they please. So in this country, you're free to do as you wish. You're free to disrespect another person. And if I, as another citizen, come and tell you not to, the common response is what? It's none of your business. I can do and say whatever I like. Where does this stem from? What is the root of this? The root is that you can do whatever you like, and as another person, you're not responsible towards telling him what to do. Actually, if you do tell him, then you're opposed to the notion of freedom. You don't want freedom. So, and anyone who doesn't want freedom, obviously there's something wrong with them. We spoke about how politicians and how hypocrites, they manipulate words and their meanings. So one of the words we said was freedom. This is how they manipulate the word of freedom to then turn good into evil and evil into good. We also want freedom, but our definition is something else. We enjoin the good and forbid the evil. We don't enjoin the evil and forbid the good. So this is what will happen. They will hijack this notion and destroy it. There's a famous riwayah from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, where he states there will come a time, there will come a point in time in society, which is making reference to, you know, towards the end of time, that people will follow the sayings and the commands of a group of so-called scholars, of so-called qurra. When we spoke about who the Qurra are, I mean scholars who explain and make tafsir of what religion really is. And they perceive these individuals as worshippers and believers of the message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. These same scholars, so-called scholars, they will propagate the message that it isn't necessary for one to enjoin the good and forbid the evil. This isn't logic. And therefore, this social responsibility will slowly cease to exist. We've made this point in previous lectures. We said that what did one of the things, one of the distortions that the Khulafa of the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his father and his brother made was to say that predestiny exists absolutely and that an individual isn't responsible for his actions. Therefore, there is no meaning behind enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. So these scholars that Imam Baqir alayhi salam is saying are the same people. They will propagate such a message, and they say that there's no reason to enjoin the good and forbid the evil, it's not wajib. Although, we already know it's of the furu' al-deen. And we have verses and hadith in the Holy Qur'an and from the Holy Prophet. They will propagate this notion of an individualistic society, which is what exists today in this country, right? This country is driven not towards social responsibility, but rather everyone is looking out for their own affairs. So this is a problem and a cancer that exists in today's world. Now, how does one go about enjoining the good and forbidding the evil? There are different forms and different levels that one must do that. And each one is dependent on the other, meaning it's progressive. First you must do the first step, and then you are allowed to progress to the next step if necessary. So the first step of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil is for each individual to have a sense of hatred and disgust towards that evil act, towards that bad act. For you in your heart to feel angered by the fact that evil exists and for people to be following it. So if you see someone doing something wrong, the first step you need to do is to make sure you've already established the fact that you hate it, that you don't like it, that it shouldn't exist. This is the driving force towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. That means if this is weak, we won't follow through with enjoining the good and forbidding the evil because we have weak faith. Again, when we have weak faith in Islamic teachings, our actions will also portray this weakness. If someone doesn't believe in the notion of serving Allah fully, then obviously in his prayers he'll be weak. Sometimes he'll pray, sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll fast, sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll lack Muslim, sometimes he won't. Why? This all stems from a lack of belief, a lack of faith. So the first step is for all of us to establish this hatred and disgust and disassociation from that. Now, the enemy also knows this is the first level. So what do? They make sure that they try to destroy this first foundation. How do they do that? How can they eliminate your disgust and your disassociation from the evil and from the munkar? They surround you with it. Your environment becomes an environment that you are surrounded by immorality. And things that are moral and things that we perceive as good are then looked down upon and they are dismissed. So look in today's society, look at the environment we live in. We are surrounded by so many bad and evil things, so many immoral things, and it's constantly put in our faces and we hear about it. And if we're not careful, this will happen, and it is happening, is that we tend to disassociate that hate and disgust with that action. For example, if you felt extremely sensitive towards the notion of modesty, and if you saw someone that didn't practice the concept of modesty, whether in any form, whether the hijab, the physical hijab, whether the social hijab, which needs to be discussed, because we always think that hijab is only the physical hijab. That means if one has the piece of cloth, then they are hijaba, or they have the hijab. No, hijab consists of a number of elements. This is one of them. Anyways, let's say you're sensitive towards this fact. Now they surround you with immodest people. The first day when you see someone dressed poorly, you cover your eyes. Astaghfirullah. What is this? You put your head down. You look the other way. The next time, the same. You may have the same effect, but to a lesser degree. Then continue, repeat. And it will come to a time that when you see someone dressed in modest, it will be so normal that you won't even feel like you need to look away. This is normal. Everyone's like this. Nothing wrong with it. It's their culture. Now apply this to all of the evils that exist in the world today. Stealing, everyone steals. Lying, everyone lies. It's not that bad. See, now it makes this sin, it makes this evil less important to you, and you downplay really how bad this is. We know one of the teachings, one of the moral teachings in Islam, is that no sin should be looked down upon and no sin should be degraded. Even the smallest sin should be made so big that an individual makes sure he doesn't perform it. Why? Because what's important is not the sin itself. Rather, what's important is who is committing the sin and in the presence of who. When you sin, you're in the presence of Allah. And even if it's a small lie that we may think is not that important, the fact that you are disobeying your Lord in His presence, that should be enough to stop us from performing that. But we have destroyed our morality, we have destroyed our sense of how we define and how important we see performing Islamic actions and allowing ourselves to sin and do things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not pleased with. So when the enemy, when the hypocrite, the munafiq, surrounds you with these bad things, you become accustomed to it, and now you don't really feel that bad about the action in general. My children, you know, it's not that big of a deal if they don't always eat halal. Everyone around them is eating halal. Let them, they're kids, they're children. It's okay, later they will. If they don't pray, it's okay. If they don't wear hijab, it's okay. Look, everyone around them doesn't wear hijab. It's tough for them. So slowly, you're not affected to say that this command of Allah, this Islamic teaching, and this Islamic value, now is not that important anymore. Now what we want to get to today is this notion of brotherhood. When you're being when you're living in an individualistic society, and all they tell you is your time is money, you should always be looking out for yourself. The successful man will spend as much time as he can and invest as much as he can for himself and his family. So if you see someone in need, society tells you for you to be successful, you shouldn't give to him. Why? Because then there's less for you. You shouldn't spend time and donate time to help other people. Why? Because your time is money. You can be making money. We're talking about having the food drive. This society tells you not to go participate. Why? It's none of your business. You're not responsible if this person doesn't have food. He should have made better choices in his life. You who made the right choices in your life, now you're the doctor, now you're the lawyer, now you're the engineer, now you're the technician. You should now have a good time. If he messed up in his life, it's his own fault. See, this destroys this notion of social responsibility. It destroys this brotherhood. It makes us all enemies towards each other. So that's the first stage. Sense of hatred in one's heart. And we need to make sure that this is always there and the fire is always burning. And we always try to increase this fire. That we always are upset and disgusted by evil that exists in the world. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So that's the first stage. This is on a personal level. The next stage is for an individual to now show this hatred and this disgust with facial expressions. We said that each of these need to be performed in order. We don't want to skip steps here. So the next step is for you to show your disassociation and your disregard for that by your facial expressions. If someone's doing something wrong, facially you show that I don't approve of what is being done. So this is the second stage. The third stage is what? Now you use your words and your tongue to portray this message and to send this message. Now, a lot of times, unfortunately, we skip steps. Yes, most of us will have this hatred in our heart, but we'll skip the second step of facial expressions towards us not liking what people are doing, especially in our families and our children. We'll quickly skip to the third step, which is what? Using our words. Start yelling at them. What is it that you're doing? Stop doing this. Why aren't you praying? Pray. Who are these friends that you have? What is this that you're listening to? What is this that you're watching? So on and so forth. No reason to expand on this. It's pretty clear. So, the third step is for one to use one's tongue. Now, this is also broken and divided into two parts. Islam tells us that first, you use a soft tongue. You ask or you let inform the person respectfully. You inform the person, even, they say, with a smile on your face. You show your affection and care, because the reason behind this is because you're brothers. If you're truly brothers and you sincerely care for the other person. So if you sincerely care, you want to show that sincerity. If you start yelling at him, he's not sure whether you care about him or not. A true brother doesn't begin and guide another brother by start yelling at him, telling him how bad he is. We can't guide our children and attract them towards Islam by yelling and forcing them to be good Muslims, or what we perceive to be good Muslims. The first step is to use a soft tongue. And this is a sunnah of the Holy Prophet. This is a sunnah of the Ahlul Bayt. Did we not say when people would come and curse the Imams in their faces, whether knowing they are the Imams or not, what would the Imams do? Would they turn around and say, you are so-and-so, your lineage and so-and-so, you're going to go to hell. I'm the Imam, Allah loves me, Allah hates you. No, he said, it's fine. I see that you are a stranger and a traveler in this city. Do you need a place to stay? My house is available. Do you need food? I'll prepare food for you. So this is a sign of brotherhood. Even if you're yelling and telling me how bad I am, since I love and care for you, I am now with a soft tongue guiding you indirectly towards abandoning this quality, which those individuals, when they found out who these individuals truly, who the Imams truly were, they were all affected and became of their lovers and followers.